Okay. Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to, this is our fourth visit to Sutton Courtenay in All Saints Churchyard. We come down here on either on or as close to my father's birthday. This year we are fortunate it happens to be today, because we normally come down on a Sunday. And it's very good of you all to turn up and support this event, and especially the event in the church where cream teas will be served afterwards. And I'm sure they will be delighted to take money off you, and they will give you a jolly good cream tea in exchange. What I will do, I'm going to read a piece from As I Please, which I try to do every year, do a bit of a reading. So this is from Tribune, March the 17th, 1944. With no power to put my decrees into operation, but with as much authority as most of the exile governments now sheltering in various parts of the world, I pronounce sentence of death on the following words and expressions: Achilles heel, jackboot, hydra-headed, ride roughshod over, stab in the back, petty bourgeois, stinking corpse, liquidate, iron heel, bloodstained oppressor, cynical betrayal, lackey, flunky, mad dog, jackal, hyena, bloodbath. No doubt this list will have been added to from time to time, but it will do to go on with. It contains a fair selection of the dead metaphors and ill-translated foreign phrases which have been current in Marxist literature for years past. There are, of course, many other perversions of the English language besides this one. There is official English, or striped trouser, the language of white papers, parliamentary debates in their more decorous moments, and BBC news bulletins. There are the scientists and the economists with their instinctive preference for words like contraindicate and deregionalization. There is American slang, which for all its attractiveness probably tends to impoverish the language in the long run. And there is the general slovenliness of modern English speech, with its decadent vowel sounds. Throughout the London era, you have to use sign language to distinguish between threepence and three pence, and its tendency to make verbs and nouns interchangeable. But here I am concerned only with one kind of bad English, Marxist English, or pamphletese, which can be studied in the Daily Worker, the Labour Monthly, Plebs, the New Leader, and similar papers. Many of the expressions used in political literature are simply euphemisms or rhetorical tricks. Liquidate, for instance, or eliminate, is a polite word for kill, while realism normally means dishonesty. But Marxist phraseology is peculiar in that it consists largely of translations. Its characteristic vocabulary comes ultimately from German or Russian phrases, which have been adopted in one country after another with no attempt to find suitable equivalents. Here, for instance, is a piece of Marxist writing. It happens to be an address delivered to the Allied armies by the citizens of Pantelleria. The citizens of Pantelleria pay grateful homage to the Anglo-American forces for their promptness with which they have liberated them from the evil yoke of a megalomaniac and satanic regime which, not content with having sucked like enormous octopus the best energies of true Italians for 20 years, is now reducing Italy to a mass of ruins and misery for one motive only: the insane personal profit of its chiefs, who, under an ill-conceived mask of hollow so-called patriotism, hide the basest passions, and plotting together with the German pirates, hatch the lowest egotism and blackest treatment, while all the time, with revolting cynicism, they tread on the blood of thousands of Italians. This filthy stew of words is presumably a translation from the Italian, but the point is that one would not recognize it as such. It might be a translation from any other European language, or it might come straight out of the Daily Worker. So truly international is this style of writing. Its characteristic is the endless use of ready-made metaphors. In the same spirit, when Italian submarines were sinking the ships that took arms to Republican Spain, the Daily Worker urged the British Admiralty to sweep the mad dogs from the seas. Clearly, people capable of using such phrases have ceased to remember that words have meanings. A Russian friend tells me that the Russian language is richer than English in terms of abuse. so that Russian invective cannot always be accurately translated. Thus, when Molotov referred to the Germans as cannibals, he was perhaps using some word which sounded natural in Russian, but to which cannibal was only a rough approximation. But our local communists have taken over from the defunct Imprecor and similar sources a whole series of crudely translated phrases, and from the force of habit have come to think of them as actual English expressions. The communist vocabulary of abuse applied to fascists or socialists according to the line of the moment includes such terms as hyena, corpse, lackey, pirate, hangman, bloodsucker, mad dog, criminal, assassin, whether at first, second or third hand. These are all translations and by no means the kind of word that an English person naturally uses to express disapproval. The language of this kind is used with an astonishing indifference as to its meaning. Ask a journalist what a jackboot is and you will find that he does not know. Yet he goes on talking about jackboots, or what is meant by riding roughshod. Very few people know that either. For that matter, in my experience, very few socialists know the meaning of the word proletariat. You can see a good example of Marxist language at its worst in the words lackey and flunky. Pre-revolutionary Russia was still a feudal country in which hordes of idle men servants were part of the social setup. In the context, lackey, as a word of abuse, had a meaning. In England, the social landscape is quite different. Except at public functions, the last time I saw a footman in livery was in 1921. And in fact, in ordinary speech, the word flunky has been obsolete since the 90s, and the word lackey for about a century. Yet they and other equally inappropriate words are dug up for pamphleteering purposes. The result is the style of writing that bears the same relation to writing real English as doing a jigsaw puzzle bears to a painting a picture. It is just a question of fitting together a number of ready-made pieces. Just talk about the hydra-headed jackboots riding roughshod over blood-stained hyenas, and you are all right, for confirming of which, see almost any pamphlet issued by the Communist Party or by any other political party for that matter. And now I would like to introduce my grandson, Archie Blair, who will read you a short poem from one of my father's poems, which have been collected by Dionne Venables, who put it into a wonderful volume. Archie?
The Photographer. College Days number 5, 9th of July, 1920. Not a breath is heard, but a moving of the lip, as his hand stays poised over the shutter. And only the gnat on his neck gives a nip, and we think of the words we may utter. He develops them darkly at the dead of night, in the little black hole of an attic. He pulls all the curtains to shut out the light, and stays there for ages, ecstatic. He takes bits of paper and puts them in frames, and leaves them to print all the morning, and thinks they'll be printed and signed with our names, the chemist or jeweller's scornings. But many are loud are the words that he speaks, and much more in anger than sorrow. And he looks at the things that he's worked on for weeks, and starts at them again on the morrow. We thought as we saw him undoing a clip, as he walked unobserving towards us, it was wiser no longer to stay but to skip, for the refuge the gods might afford us. Quickly and gaily we made our way, and showed no traces of sadness, for we felt we were free from his grasp for the day, and we left him alone to his madness.
Well done, Archie. And finally, I would like my two little granddaughters, not so little, Bella and Connie, who will come and lay some flowers on my father's grave. Well done, girls. Thank you very much.